This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It's 5 minutes after 9 o'clock. Thanks very much for staying with us here on Power 98.7. My name is Thabo Shole Mashao. I'm standing in for Thabiso Kotane. We are together till 12 midnight on Power Perspective, and your perspective counts. And the team, the entire team is still here, Spoo's pressing the buttons, and Loazi's on the other side, making sure that the show is going according to plan, together with Ntabiseng. And you are there, of course, and we are anticipating your interactions with eagerness of great proportions. One of the things that we were told was that there could be an estimate of around 40,000 people in South Africa who could die of the disease, this virus, by the end of November 2020. But according to PENDA, Pandemic Data Analysis, they are adamant that these projections are far too high. And they are calling for greater transparency in calculations used. And joining us from PENDA is none other than Ian Megorian, who is with the organizations that I've just mentioned. Ian, thank you so much for joining us on Power. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you to your listeners.
I was almost relieved when I saw this, but then we need to ask critical questions. And as an entity that deals with data analysis, we can't just say, great, whoopee, lesser people are going to die. Firstly, why are you disagreeing with the projections of the minister and the team that is working on this of 40,000?
Well, I think the reasons are quite simple. The 40,000 estimates, one of the things that you can do when you look at these models is say, how many deaths per million people are you calculating? Mm. Right? So in other words, we take the scary population, the scary total case numbers out, and we just compare like with like. Mm. And to give you a very simple answer, the worst country in the world at the moment in terms of how many deaths per million population is Belgium.
Okay.
And effectively, this new revised model, and it has been revised down substantially from 372,000 deaths in the worst case, but this new model that is being touted is suggesting that we're going to have a death rate almost equal to Belgium's. Mm. So it's very difficult for us to understand where we have done substantial testing in the country. We have done substantial community screening in the country. And at the moment, our death rate stands at 13 per million. Mm-hmm. So how is it going to jump to somewhere near the 700 per million mark?
Mm. And I mean, the doomsday prophets would then argue that perhaps the easing of the lockdown, the interactions that we are seeing and that we will see in the next few weeks, and others will then argue and say the winter that is anticipated may form part of the contributory factors. How would you dismiss that?
I certainly don't dismiss that at all. I will simply point to various things. It is entirely true that a coronavirus is more likely to be active in winter. There's no evidence to dispute that. But you do have to ask yourself a question. When the virus entered Europe, Eastern Europe and Western Europe were both in winter. So was Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And we had significantly different infection rates and death rates in different types of countries. So what distinguishes Eastern Europe and Russia is a poorer population. And what we're seeing all the way through the world is that higher income countries are worst affected by COVID-19. Mm. Now, I'm not a medical expert. I don't need to explain why. Mm. I leave it to those experts. But the data simply and irrevocably says that lower income countries are experiencing to date lower infection rates and significantly lower death rates.
Mm. And our population, does it have a role to play? I mean, South Africa is fairly young. I mean, you saying that the current modelling underplays the extent to which age has played a role in the majority of COVID-19 fatalities. And go ahead.
Whenever you do this sort of modelling, you have to adjust for the age structure of a country.
Yeah.
So I'll return you to the Belgium example as a simple one. The average age in Belgium is 41. The average age in South Africa is 27. We have a very small elderly population in comparison to other countries. Sure. There is no question that this disease has a profound effect on elderly people with comorbidities. And when I say profound, just a couple of numbers for you, but people with comorbidities and over the age of 65 make up more than 90% of the deaths in the data that we have so far worldwide.
And
we don't have that population structure.
We have a younger population, and that simply means if we were to juxtapose this against at least the percentages that we are given, that the current global death rates vary from 0% for children under 10 to 0.2% for people aged between 10 to 39 years, and up to 14.8% for people over 80 years. Mm-hmm. So that deals extensively with the argument of age, that we are a fairly younger country, so we will be more cushioned. But what about our health system that is not as competent as would be compared to the countries that you've just cited?
Well, I think you have to ask the question in a slightly different way. Our health system is stretched to the limit at the best of times, never mind with coronavirus. So the idea that we could ramp up our health system in the space of 21 days seems absurd.
Sure. But what I was trying to ask, especially with the health system, its competency, the resources that we have, you walk into a clinic at any given point, you have more people than you would have in an advanced country and a developed nation. You walk in, and at times, more often than not, we do not have medication to treat ailments that have been with us for some time. You walk in, and let alone the queues, but the caring itself, the treatment itself, often is not what people would be thrilled with. And so, if the pandemic were to really take a hit at us in this expected winter, can our system then absorb those patients? And if it can't absorb, wouldn't that make sense that there would be more deaths than anticipated?
Well, I'm not sure that you can link the two together. There have been healthcare systems in the world that have been overwhelmed, Northern Italy, New York City, etc., that have been stretched beyond their capacity, Spain, etc. But they all made it through.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, when you look at the deaths per million, it's very difficult. It's extremely difficult, actually, to track down the capacity of the healthcare system to the rate of deaths that have been reported. So, I mean, the larger question, I think, is not about COVID-19. Why is our health system in such a precarious state? And I think that's a much bigger question than this small time interval that we have this virus. It's a much more existential question of why is the health system so stretched on a day-to-day basis?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it better to prepare for the worst, though, than to underestimate?
Well, I think that the Panda team, what we're doing is we're suggesting that the modeling that is driving these decisions needs to be questioned. And the modeling, if I can give you some examples, first of all, outside of South Africa, so let's start there. The UK and the USA decided to go on the lockdown route based on an Imperial College model. The Imperial College model predicted that there would be 510,000 deaths in the UK. As you know, we have the UK is well through the disease and they've had some 38,000 deaths. The same model predicted 2.2 million deaths in the USA. The USA is well through the disease and they've had 106,000 deaths. So we're talking about models that are not wrong by a couple of thousand or even a couple of hundred thousand. We're talking about models that are wrong by orders of magnitude. Now, I take you back to the models that we're relying on in South Africa. And you just have to ask yourself, sense. You don't have to be a mathematician or an actuary. Just ask yourself some common sense questions about how accurate are these models? Are they painting a picture that is extreme or the worst case scenario by some crazy thing that has to happen in the next couple of months for us to get up to those kind of death rates? The fact is we are testing. The fact is we are doing everything that is expected of us as a country. We are not seeing this disease in anywhere near the rates that the models predicted. And surely, by now, we should be looking at the rest of the world where there is a mountain of data out there and saying, let's look at the real data and then model what could happen or may happen in South Africa.
Sure. Let's then, Ian, let's look at the modeling that you have. What does it anticipate by the end of November, if November is the target at all? What figures do you come up with your modeling?
Well, there are a couple of things that I'll say to you. The first one is a very important one. If you have a look at the rest of the world, the period from where the disease gains traction until the disease enters its final stages is not months and months and months. It ranges between 70 and 110 days. So November for me is an extreme timeline. By then the disease would be well past. And it would take something extraordinary for South Africa to suddenly be different to the rest of the world. How would that happen? So to answer the original question, part of the original question, we're seeing no more than 10,000 plus minus.
And what's the time frame for that?
Well, we certainly can't see that the time frame is going to be anywhere in any way different from the rest of the world. The disease is currently gaining traction. We believe we're on the first quarter of the curve, and we will know within weeks whether we are close to the peak. But that literally is within the next 10 to 12 days.
So let me see if I understand this properly, Ian. So the modeling of 40,000, you're saying it's exaggerated by the end of November. We wouldn't be there at the time. And you have juxtaposed it and compared it with other countries, rightly so. But now at this particular point, when you engage government about the figures that they have given, what comes out of it? What is the intention? Have you engaged them? And what is the sense from your scientific point of view that they would bring about these figures, which you are saying they're exaggerated?
Well, I think that there's a reality here. that, for example, the initial model put out by Sakima suggested that we could have anything between 71 and 370,000 deaths. That has been substantially downgraded to the 40,000 that we're talking about now.
Yes.
But I think what is important to remember, and I think it's important to state, is that that original model that had those numbers was the model that was used by the government to make their decision to lock down. And we should not forget that. So what you have is a...
Was it a scarecrow?
When you plug in variables into a model, you can get very different answers depending on the variables that you put in.
Sure.
Now, so let me give you just a very simple thought process. Right up until this date, the model that is being proposed for South Africa is still based on information that we had in March about China. In March. It has not responded to the information that we now have in June. And that information, obviously, is mountainous in comparison to little pockets of information coming out of Wuhan and Hubei in China in March. But you can just go and have a look at the slides. They reference March all over the place. So the model has not been updated. It is not reflecting our current knowledge, and that is our big issue.
Well, it's 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. This is Power 98.7. You're on Power Perspective. My guest, Ian Megorian, he is with Penda. They call themselves Pandemic Data Analysis, and they are arguing vehemently against the projected numbers of deaths in South Africa by the end of November that have been placed by government at 40,000. They're saying it's way too much. It cannot be. And looking at other countries like Belgium, that's the worst case scenario that we will never even get to, despite all other variables that may be there. So I'd love to hear from you. You've got a question for Ian. Let me not monopolize my time with him. Feel free to engage him on this, that, and the other regarding their modeling and how they project the data to be at, especially of the deaths in South Africa and the rate of infection. Feel free to engage us on 0861-987-000. 0861-987-000. I'm just looking at this, the models in a nutshell, Ian, and correct me if I'm mistaken. I see here that the initial social distancing and lockdown measures worked to decrease the rate of new infections and published the peak of the pandemic. But also the peak will happen at different times. This is how they argued. They said the peak will happen at different times in different provinces. This kind of variation will also happen between districts and even sub-districts. And under almost all scenarios, hospital and ICU capacity will be exceeded. So I'm, you know, not being a scientist and not working in this field and not being a data analyst, I'm just wondering firstly about our population. I'm wondering about the number of people who will get the disease, but they will die without knowing that it's because of the virus itself. I am also wary of how overwhelmed, like I said before, our system will be. So from your side, I mean, the modeling that is put together for the government by the experts that have put it together against yours, what is the response from theirs? And I mean, is it because I would assume all of you are driven by science to get to the end result, but how would they be so completely out of tune with the numbers, and you have complete different numbers?
Well, that is a very good question. So let's not delve into the models and how they work. As I've said, those parameters are very different. But can I ask you a common sense question?
Okay. Well, let me put my head on the block and say yes.
Okay. So the model currently suggests that we will reach an active case peak.
Yes.
That will be almost a quarter of the current world cases, the current cases in the entire world.
Yeah.
We're going to reach a quarter of those. Mm. Now, South Africa makes up less than 1% of the population of the world. Mm. How would you imagine that that is possible?
See, I think it's not possible. However, given that we know very little about this virus, given how new and the novelty of the virus itself, I would hesitate taking any speculation, especially with the little knowledge that I have. Of course, I mean, what you said makes sense. However, given that we know so little about the virus, that's why people like myself, perhaps, and others are a bit apprehensive to even say, guys, you are wrong. But that's why we have you on air to say, guys, this is not scientifically based because of the following reasons.
So... So I want to be clear here.
Yeah.
We're not making a medical case, even though we have a lot of medical professionals. We're not making a medical case.
Yeah.
What we are saying is that actually we know a lot about this virus. We know a lot about how it goes through a population. We know how it peaks. We know it has a long tail when it tapers off. But we have we have over 66 countries that are through the peak of the virus.
Yeah.
So we can model against those countries. Mm. We can look at them, make comparisons, look at inter-country comparisons. We can there is a mountain of data. It's not that we know very little. Yes, we are chasing down a vaccine. And yes, we are chasing down the right serology, seroprevalence tests. All of that is true. But we do know an awful lot about the virus and what it does.
Ian, let me just bring in someone who agrees with you here. And this is a listener, Falaza from Klerksdorp, calling from Klerksdorp. Falaza, it's been a while. Welcome. What do you want to say to Ian?
Good evening. It is indeed Morenaka. Ian, I think, is very much spot on. I find the prediction that was projected as a scarecrow and also to delve into other sinister business and political terrain. I'll tell you why I'm saying this. The initial projection was 87,000 and then the reduction to 40,000. And when you look at the rate at which people are dying, unless if now everyone who's dying is going to be included under the COVID in order to really satisfy the projected numbers. Other than that, I can see that we were just sold to a big scarecrow. Mm-hmm. Now, here is my my thinking. I might be wrong. You must have seen now that the government has borrowed money close to, it was 50 million from the World Bank and the IMF, I mean, another 104 million, I mean, US dollars. Mm. And the conditions to spend that particular money is that it must be utilized for COVID-based related projects. So it means that now this thing is going to be dragged on so that the money that is borrowed, it's going to be utilized for the COVID. Everything now, they are going to find a concept to link everything to COVID to justify the expenditure. Yeah. So for me, I'm thinking that we created, I mean, the opportunity for politicians, I mean, to build, I mean, the imaginary trust from, I mean, their citizens, whilst we dodging other, I mean, responsibilities.
Falaza, thank you so much for that. Ian, before we say goodbye to you, I know we have booked your time for only 30 minutes. And one of the scientists that were informing the president, and we are told, according to the reports, they said, based on the modeling, we felt at least 120,000 would die in South Africa because of COVID-19. Since then, studies in the US, China, and Iceland have shown that at least 50% of infected people are asymptomatic, and that changes the numbers completely. And you know, so that this also comes from the government experts, and it says here that this is not a short-term crisis, and they're saying that according to the trajectory that we have right now, it's 50 to 80 people. And it says the new information showed that between 50 to 80 times more people are infected than they thought, but they are asymptomatic. How does that play into that scenario? Does that advance the government's argument, or are we being hoodwinked?
Well, I think you've got to ask the question the other way around. And it's an important proposition. If such a large percentage of positive COVID-19 patients are asymptomatic, in other words, they are never affected by the disease, and we know that the working population is hardly affected by the disease, and the learning population and the children are not, it's a tiny percentage.
But an asymptomatic person can infect others, whether they are asymptomatic or not, isn't it?
Well, 100%. Of course, an asymptomatic person can infect another person.
Yeah.
But surely you would accept that we have had community transmission now for a great number of days. Right?
Yes.
And we have done a great deal of community screening, more than 10% of the population. And we have done a great deal of tests. Right? And with those tests, accurate PCR swab tests, we are not finding an infection rate anywhere near the infection rates in the Western world. And that is true not just for South Africa, that is true for other low-income countries in Eastern Europe, in Asia, etc., etc. It's not unique to this planet, to this country. It is being experienced around the planet. So you have to ask yourself a question. At some point, you have to believe something. And you have to believe the tests.
If you are taking the tests, yes.
Well, we are certainly testing a reasonable sample size, no different to other countries, maybe a bit lower and maybe a bit more erratic. But the numbers speak for themselves. Those tests have been conducted. We have the knowledge.
Sure.
We have a low infection rate in this country.
Ian, listen, we'll have to take this up some other time again, but a very interesting conversation. Really appreciate it. Wishing you all the best. I hope that we can speak in the near future, and keep well. Thanks very much for coming through, Ian.
Great.
Thank you. Ian Megorian, who is with Pandemic Data Analysis, and they call themselves Panda, and they're saying that their number, 40,000 people who are speculated to that would have died by the end of November, according to the government modeling. Ian and the entity, they're saying it's way, way, way exaggerated. We won't get anywhere near there. Actually, they're saying that South Africa could reasonably produce a death forecast of more than 10,000.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.